Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD, brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? I'm Troy Skinner, joined this week again by Tamar Bradley, the owner of the Owl Nest, and Jonathan Schweitzer, the senior pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel. Last couple of weeks, we've been talking about Christianity and paganism and in some kind of general, you know, foundational setting. Let's get our definition set and all that sort of thing. And we're almost there. I don't think we're completely home free, but we're almost there. And then we can start to dive into some specifics that might be a little bit fun to kind of hash out and explore a little bit. Between shows, I talked with Tamar, trying to get a toehold, as I'm calling it, about exactly, you know, how she would describe what her faith is. And if you pay attention to the New York Times bestseller lists at all over the last several years, then you know who Elaine Pagels is. Elaine Pagels wrote a book called The Secret Gospel of Thomas and others. She's a big proponent of modern day Gnosticism and the feminine divine movement. If you don't know the name and you've watched some PBS specials on The Search for the True Authentic Jesus, any of those shows with like John Dominic Crossan from DePaul University, you've seen Elaine Pagels interviewed. If you've bought one of those Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report or whatever magazines about Christianity, about faith, have you seen those?
Yeah.
You know, Elaine Pagels is typically quoted in those articles, sometimes featured as maybe an author or co-author. So anyway, I'm using that as kind of this general thing that I know something about and saying it sounds similar to what Tamar is talking about. And so I said, so you and Elaine Pagels, like, you know, like this, you're tight?
I wish.
And but as far as your view on things, pretty darn close.
Probably as close as we're gonna get, I would say. The goddess movement, it's still new, it's still evolving, and it's kind of where we are in our times in our lives. We're almost to the point where we can pull any goddess, pull her strengths, and feel archetypally close to her, especially women.
Archetype.
Right.
Meaning, yeah, so you feel close to the archetype.
The attributes of, if I was a woman that was very concerned with my beauty and love and things like that, I might feel drawn to Aphrodite. I definitely feel drawn to a more mothering role, and I feel Mary is an awesome role model and just a great spirit that I feel connected to. I love communing with her.
So what are some of the basic core values then that are represented by the goddess that attract you, the core principles?
Feminine mysteries, the stages that women go through from being a child, growing into a girl, into an adolescent, into a teen, to the mother aspect, to the crone. And a very popular term is the triple goddess, maiden, mother, crone. The three.
What's crone?
Crone is the wise woman, the elder, somebody who has passed menopause is typically considered crone.
I don't know if anybody can hear that on the air or not, but Jonathan's being paged.
He's calling.
That's right.
Code blue.
So it's almost a very pragmatic helping you to understand what it means to be a woman and the different goddesses and the language of
the phases of her life.
Of the goddess, the different goddesses seem to fill up the meaning for you of what it means to be a woman at 13 years of age, at 18 years of age, at 30
Absolutely.
Years of age, at 45, 50 years of age. And so for you, it's a tool for knowing what it means to be the best woman that
right.
you could be.
When I look in mythology, you look at these wonderful things that these women did, and I pull on that. I pull on their strength, and when I feel weak, I look at their, you know, what their weaknesses might have been, what their trials and tribulations might have been, and I see how that
applies
to my life.
So you're kind of looking to the goddesses as mentors, as it were. You know, well, I wonder how Venus would have handled this or some of these other ones that
Absolutely.
You described.
Absolutely, definitely. And one big thing, talking about pop culture, goddess is often shown to us through the phases of the moon. That's a big.
Well, let me pick up on this, Jonathan, to kind of put you on, I don't know if in the hot seat's the right way to phrase this, but you know it's not an uncommon thing to hear. It's not like you hear it all the time, but it's not uncommon to hear somebody say that this whole idea that God is masculine, and women are to sit down and shut up in church, and women can't be in certain denominations, can't be in the pastorate, they can't lead a congregation, they can't whatever. I mean, what do you say to somebody who says, the Christian religion, the Christian church, it's not women friendly?
I would have to say that from my perspective, if you look at India, you look at ancient Greece, you look at China, you look at Russia, you look at the African cultures, I would have to say that the perspective on women around the world in terms of lifting her up and giving her the freedom to be everything that it seems like she should be free to be, that you find it most pervasive most pervasively lifted up in Christian cultures and in Christian environments. You know, the concept of motherhood, the concept of being honored for who you are and being honored for the differences, i.e., grace and gentleness and kindness and nurturing, being honored for those things as opposed to being thought of as just a slave, and that the Judeo-Christian environment leading into the West has been historically on the face of the planet the most kind to women at large. If you went to India, or if you went to China, or if you went to places in South down in Africa where that are pre-Christian, the perspective of women is just ugly and controlling, and they're stuck. There's not a sense of freedom to be involved in business, and freedom to be involved in teaching, and freedom to be an important voice.
Well, these are
the
pretty new
square.
Rights to women in the Christian community over, say, the past 1,000 years. We didn't always have these rights within that community.
I would agree, but the point is that this is the only place in history where it's happened, and that's what I'm saying. Yes, they're new, but I think they're new because Christianity has been progressively aiding culture in its ability to honor and protect and to serve the women that are in our midst.
Now, what about Mary Magdalene? She was, her name was dragged through the mud terribly.
By who?
The church until the 1960s, was it, that she was finally...
Yeah, I don't know who taught you that, because Mary Magdalene...
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church, their history.
In the Southern Baptist church that I grew up in, she was a whore.
Right. Oh, absolutely. But the point is that she was a whore that changed when she was touched by Christ, which is a profoundly liberating and redeeming thing.
I'm going to have to... I disagree with that from what I've read about Mary Magdalene being
right,
a very educated woman, a priestess in her own right.
Okay, but let me deal with this on a different level. If there was a woman who was a whore, I mean whore in the classical sense, meaning she used her sexual in her body as a tool for making money, all right, somebody who was considered a whore, and if there was a story about a woman like that, let's not call her Mary Magdalene, we'll call her Jessica. You know, Jessica and Jesus meet, and the people want to stone her, and Jesus says, okay, he who has no sin, throw the first stone. And then later on, she comes and breaks a vial of perfume over his feet, and he rebukes his disciples who are complaining about the value of the perfume, and he rebukes them, and he says, now wait a second. What she has done is a very beautiful thing, and wherever the gospel is preached around the world, what she has done for me will be told in remembrance of what she's done. I mean, maybe it wasn't Mary Magdalene that was about. If that was just some other whore that was about, that's a pretty phenomenal thing that Christ presented to us the right way to look at and to redeem people and to bring them back, you know, whoever that was. And my point is that whether or not the name Mary Magdalene as a whore has been dragged through the mud, you know, by the Catholic Church or whoever, the story that's given to us in the Gospels is probably one of the most powerful and liberating things that ever happened.
By the way, for the record, I wasn't trying to say that the Roman Catholics had dragged her through the mud. I'm saying that they have been criticized for doing so. And I think that the issue, and I don't want to get bogged down in this, but there's a passage. There's a passage in the New Testament that talks about a prostitute, a whore, who then has a positive encounter with Jesus, and then it's the next passage in the New Testament that introduces us to Mary Magdalene. And so some have drawn the connection that that prostitute must have been Mary Magdalene, but it's not clear that that's the case. And personally, by the way, I think they're two different individuals.
There's lots of Marys.
But the two stories
right,
are blended.
But this is my point.
The prostitute's
is
not even given a name. It's not like she's even named Mary, but it follows in the heel like, oh, they must be talking about her. But I think there's a transition there. But again, the point is, I don't think it really matters in the grand scheme.
Okay, but I would argue that it does in this sense. Let's say that this person that is Mary Magdalene was also the whore, right? The fact that she becomes a part of Jesus' entourage and that she's there at his death on the cross, at his resurrection, that he appears to her and speaks to her, and that she's this figure, Mary Magdalene, whoever she is raised to a level of being, you know, a member of the witnesses for Jesus Christ— that doesn't drag her through the mud. That exalts the ability of people to be redeemed from wherever they are to a place of honor and dignity.
But
and
yet
so,
it happened. The church still slung her around. And
well, give me an example. What did the church do to Mary Magdalene through the ages?
Well, I wasn't raised Catholic. I've talked to Catholic friends about how she was, you know, just considered the whore, kind of pushed to the side. And then finally, mid-1900s sometimes, the church went ahead and made her a saint.
See, my take on it is
the church has now made her a saint?
She is a saint.
Maybe they have. I don't know.
That's pretty incredible.
But my
as saints go, I'm not much of a saint guy.
That's kind of where it gets the
Sorry, we're not letting you talk. Go ahead.
It's okay. I think that... I mean, I'm not here to be a Roman Catholic apologist. We probably should have a Roman Catholic on to do this. They probably do a much better job. But I think that what happened is they made that connection between this passage that wasn't specific about who it was and connected to Mary Magdalene. And by making that connection, they've been charged through the years with having tried to drag her through the mud. I think that's an excessive charge against the Roman Catholic Church. So, again, I want to clarify for all our Roman Catholic friends, I think this is one in which you've gotten an unfair black eye. I think that it's true that you've been charged with dragging her through the mud, but I don't think that the church ever actually has dragged her through the mud. You seeing the difference I'm trying to make?
Right.
There. I just want to make sure that I don't get a bunch of hate emails. You know, I think this is one. There are a lot of issues on which I will disagree with the Roman Catholics, but this I don't think is going to be one of them.
And my part of my big issue, and I don't even want to say I have issues with Christianity because I'm totally in the live and let live, and I respect what you believe and what you believe, and that's all I ask for in the same. But when we get to that, well, I don't know if it was Mary Magdalene, the Bible said this, but we decided it was that.
By the way, Jonathan, I'm sorry, but I don't know if this is being heard on the air or not, but as you grab the microphone, it's causing some sort of a short, and I'm hearing it in the headphones.
Good.
So just
good.
FYI, sorry.
Yeah, that's helpful.
I'm sorry.
I think that, you know, it was, you know, was this woman, the whore Mary Magdalene, wasn't it? Well, you know, let's just say it was. And again, it gets into the point where men are going through and just kind of making their own decisions on, well, we're going to say this is that.
Well, see, this is why it's so important. By the way, if you're listening to The Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. She's Tamar Bradley. He's Jonathan Schweitzer. And that's why I think it's so important to get back to something we were talking about. I don't know if it was this show or last show. They're all starting to run together in my mind now.
Sure.
So important for us to have a critical eye about what should be canon or shouldn't. Let's say that some Roman Catholic priest, heck, let's take it to the top. Let's say that a pope in the year 568 put out some sort of position paper that said that Mary Magdalene was this horrifying whore and she should be in hell with the devil forever kind of thing. it's important for us to then make a judgment. Okay, is that part of canon or not? Does that agree with what is accepted as canon or not? Does it agree with that at all? And if it doesn't, you have to reject it and go to that pope and say, and that's what Martin Luther did. He went to the Roman Catholic institution and said, you guys are wrong on a lot of issues. Here they are. There's 20 some odd of them, and I'm going to nail them to this door, and we're going to have a fight about it.
Yeah.
That's the same issue with the Gospel of Thomas and Philip and all that sort of stuff. If they're not agreeing with that canon, you got to scratch your head and say, now, wait a minute, that doesn't seem to jibe with what I understand to be true from the canon. Can we trust it?
And that's when I would tell somebody, do some homework. Go buy these extra texts. Come to my shop and buy those texts.
Sure.
And read them and have a conversation with God yourself. That's what I want everybody. I want them to think. I just don't want people to just believe what they are fed in church. To me, that's empty unless you have an actual rapport with God
yourself.
I'm
curious, Jonathan, what would you say is the, and I'll ask you the same question that just popped into my head. This might help us center the conversation a little bit better.
Yeah.
What would you say is the central point of faith? And I'll allow you some flexibility and how you want to understand the question. Meaning, what is the ultimate purpose? What is the ultimate goal? What is the thing about the thing?
Okay. I believe the thing about the thing. Such a great question. I'm having fun with it. The thing about the thing is, in my perspective, it's all about relationships. And if I lie to my wife, it's going to hurt her. And if I cheat on her, it's going to hurt her. And if I am hateful toward her or spending all my time whining because I'm covetous about what other people have and not being grateful, it's going to hurt her. It's going to undermine my relationship with her and cause her life to be difficult, irritating, painful. I'd rather not do that. And so there needs to be some standard for her to be able to say, sweetheart, you lied to me again, or sweetheart, you're treating me inappropriately about this or about that. There's got to be some standard against which she can appeal for justice, to which she can appeal and say, sweetheart, why are you doing that to me? That's not love. There's got to be some definition of love that we can agree upon. So the thing about the thing is that there also has to be some standard then for how God is treated and how we expect him to treat us. There has to that he doesn't lie to us, that he's faithful, that he blesses us, that he also helps us to be better than we are because we need to grow. And so he has tools at his disposal by which to train us up and to facilitate our growth. And so the thing about the thing to me is relationship, which is love. Love is the key. There's got to be some standard to which I can appeal. Otherwise, my God might reach out and just strike me dead, and I have nothing to appeal and say, God, that wasn't just. There has to be some standard by which we can judge God, judge one another, and say, that was right, that was wrong. And outside of that standard, what we have is injustice. We have people tyrannically ruling over and oppressing everybody else because there's no standard. They want to do whatever they want to do. And I feel like it's just fine for people to believe whatever they want until it comes down to their beliefs giving them freedom to hurt somebody else. And at that point, then we're all going to go to law, go to the court, we're going to sue one another, and we're going to try to decide who's right and who's wrong. And if we don't have a standard or we have a changing standard, then there's no way that that society can exist for any long period of time. There has to be some road signs that say, this is the speed limit, this is the line, drive on the right side of the line. There has to be something like that. Otherwise, we run into each other, we destroy one another, we have Hitler-esque type of events, Stalin, people that throw out any perspective of what's right and wrong, or that live by their own standard, and as a result, the rest of the world sits in shock because there's no standard, because they can't believe how ugly and how dark things have gotten. The light is the standard by which we measure love.
Okay, so now this divine feminine Gnostic paganist kind of thing.
I'm so confused.
Right? What's the thing of the thing with that? What's the point behind your world or your faith?
Well, when you were saying, if you go out and you cheat on your wife, or if you lie to your wife, you're hurting your wife.
Yes.
you're also, to me, you're hurting yourself.
Absolutely.
And I believe in karma. And we all know for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Everything we do, there's going to be something that balances that scale. And so the big thing with the pagans and the Wiccans, we have the big rule of harm none, the threefold law, which is, you know, whatever you do or put out there comes back to you threefold. So I definitely, you know, believe, you know, speed limit says 55, you drive at 55, or if you're like me, you go 75, you might have to slam on your brakes and almost hit somebody. And then I realize, haha, I am breaking that law. Speed limit's 55 for a reason. I'm going 75. I almost caused an accident. That was the reaction to me speeding. So I think karma, for me, has a big play in things.
Karma is very interesting to me because have you ever been to the nations on the planet that the base religious worldview believes in karma? Like, have you ever been to India? Have you ever been to some of these different places?
No, I've never.
The caste system in those places is so ugly. It's shocking to me. And I think it's very convenient for us in the West to believe in karma because we don't live with the centuries of fruit that society has borne out. It's very it just feels very convenient to me when people do that.
But there's a hint of truth in it, right? You reap what you sow, and that
but
sort
there,
of thing.
Yeah, but yeah, I do agree that you reap. Well, it's interesting because the things that you're describing so far are in no way different from Christianity. You know, the harm none. What's the threefold path you're saying?
Basically, the karma, what you do, what you put out there will come back to you times.
So
the
you
amount.
Reap what you sow.
Right. Absolutely.
That's the Christian
absolutely.
Way of saying it.
Absolutely.
So we're
so
in agreement
now
about that.
The comparison. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, and to me, karma makes me very mindful of what I'm going to do. I remember, you know, last time I didn't work out so good. You know,
Again, it's so hard for me because karma, you know, as it's taught by the Dalai Lama, karma is something that you're trying to be released from the cycle of karma.
Well,
the goal is that you would be released from all, you know, and so.
Well, going through reincarnation.
It's just interesting to me, you know, for you to use it with such warmth, you know, in your tone because it's.
Well, let me explain why I do this.
Classical Buddhist thought, you know, it's what you want to be released from. That's the bad thing. You want to be released from all your karma.
Well, I believe that before we come here,
sure,
we write out what we want to accomplish in our lives, for good, for bad, and we're continually a soul in evolution.
Before we come here, meaning we were spirits before we became human.
Right. We were spirits and we were sitting up in the cosmic school and we were writing out what we're going to do, what we want to become. Hmm. And we try to accomplish these lessons. If we want to learn compassion, then I believe that the universe, God, spirit, sets us up with potential lessons. Whether or not we choose to follow those and to work through this and become a more compassionate person or become a murderer, we have that free will. And do we take that road and learn our lesson, or do we go
that's
off
very interesting.
And
we
have
coming
to
up on the end?
Yeah, we're going to have to, I mean, we took a huge left turn here on, you know, reincarnation popped up. Like, wow, we could talk about that for a long time.
Right, right.
So I think
pull us back in.
So I think that maybe we'll talk about that in next week's show, if that is
sure.
agreeable.
Absolutely.
Because that's more than 30 seconds, I think, of material right there. And I do want to... Pine, Jonathan's response to my question about what the thing of the thing is, I thought was a very good answer, but he didn't end up touching on exactly what I might have said, and I think that Tamar's answer, I can't say whether it was good or bad because, I mean, I have to assume that she gave a good representative point of view for herself.
Sure.
So,
yes.
But for Christians,
yeah, Christ is the thing.
I think. Well, yeah, but well, yes and no.
Okay.
Because Christ is an office, that's a title. God is the thing.
Okay.
So, and you're right when you say it's about relationship, but ultimately it's about relationship with God.
Yeah, amen. I would agree with
that. And all that goes with that, and keeping in mind what that relationship is. It's a creator-creation relationship, and to keep mindful of that all of the time so that everything, every decision we make, every point of view that we have is focused on God's glory, God's purposes, God's plan, God's way. Because when we deviate from that, we end up talking about our plan, our way, our emotions, our point of view, what makes us feel good, what we want. And every time we start to get into a we, me focus, we deviate from what I think authentic, true biblical Christianity is teaching us. And it's a problem in the church, by the way. I don't think that the Christian church does a very good job of staying focused on this. But when Christianity is at its best, it is really diving deep into the root of what Christianity is. And that's what Christianity is. It's about God. Yes, we have free will, but our free will is not greater than God's free will. He has the ultimate free will that trumps our free will at every turn. So anyway, that's the point I would have made, but I'm not Jonathan Schweitzer. So anyway, thank you. Jonathan Schweitzer, pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel.
You're welcome.
The owner of the Owl Nest, Tamar Bradley.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Troy Skinner. Thanks to our sponsor, Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? And thanks so much for listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD.